fashion magazines, Hollywood films, social media, the prevailing narrative always equates thinness with beauty and success and desirability. So individuals whose bodies don't meet those standards are made to feel inadequate and unworthy. But it's more than that. People who have different shaped bodies are told that their inability to be skinny is actually a character flaw that they should fix. And that belief becomes internalized. And when people feel like it's something that they have to fix that others don't struggle with, it feels very lonely. Welcome to the Happiest Ever After podcast. That's right, happy-ish. Because instead of fairy tales of perfection, we celebrate real lives and real stories. I'm Tatiana, your host, and I'm here to guide you on your journey to better health and self-acceptance. Join me every week as we delve into science-backed truths about health, from understanding our bodies to caring for our emotional well-being. Let's get started. Hello, welcome back. Today I'm going to talk about something that I'm really excited to talk about, but it also flies in the face of popular opinion. So I'm going to bring the words of Dr. Brené Brown into the conversation. And of course, I'll share with you some things that do work if you want to live your best and healthiest life. So what is it I'm talking about? Shame. Today, I want to talk about shame, about how our culture is obsessed with shaming people into losing weight. And the worst of it is that even the people who are trying to get healthy, they buy into this idea that they need to feel shame in order to be successful. I know that on my weight loss journey, I would feel such intense shame because over the years, I'd gained weight. I'd had 3 babies. I went to graduate school. I had a full-time job. I was exhausted all of the time. And yet, I still felt this incredible shame because my body didn't look like what I wanted it to look like. It wasn't the size that I wanted it to be. And I know that I'm not alone because I now work with women as a health coach. And it truly hurts my heart when women I work with tell me that they want me to be hard on them because they have no discipline. They have been made to believe that skinny is health and health is achieved through shame. Where does this idea come from? Honestly, everywhere. We know that media plays a significant role in perpetuating weight-based shame. It glorifies thinness while stigmatizing larger bodies. How often do we see a show and we know who's supposed to be the lead, who's supposed to be the best friend, who's supposed to be the funny one because of what they look like and their body shape, because we have been conditioned with expectations. Fashion magazines, Hollywood films, social media, the prevailing narrative always equates thinness with beauty and success and desirability. So individuals whose bodies don't meet those standards are made to feel inadequate and unworthy. But it's more than that. People who have different shaped bodies are told that their inability to be skinny is actually a character flaw that they should fix. And that belief becomes internalized. And when people feel like it's something that they have to fix, it's something broken in them that others don't struggle with, it feels very lonely. And that is part of shame. Now, you might say to yourself, well, have I ever actually heard someone say that people with more body fat are flawed? Do they actually say that? But even if you've never heard somebody say you are flawed, that is the prevailing message that our culture has. We live in a culture that believes and perpetuates the idea and gives the message that people with different body shapes are flawed. Occasionally, you'll see some articles, but generally speaking, we rarely point the finger at the food industry's manipulation of high-calorie foods, even though there is ample evidence that it is designed and marketed to be consumed in large quantities. Instead, we judge the individuals who fall prey to the marketing. We are literally judging people who have fallen prey to the products that have been produced with the backing of trillions of dollars. And I am not exaggerating. Over the decades or over a century, over a trillion has been invested into food appeal, flavoring, studying. When does somebody get full off of a bag of chips? When have you sat there and eaten a bag of chips and thought, ah, I'm nice and full? But you think about eating a baked potato. That bag, and these are not little bags that we get anymore, that's a significant amount. There is artistry and science that goes into manufacturing a high caloric food that will never fill you up. And yet we judge the person that eats them. We judge on the superficial thing that we can see. We aren't judging on who the person is. And we've got studies that tell us this. So you would think that body size or shape would not play so much of a role in the workplace. You would think that in the workplace, we're going to judge people based on the quality of the work that they do. But that's not actually, well, it is partly the case, but it's not the whole story. We actually do take that judgment and that feeling of what we perceive people with different sized bodies to be. And because we make that connection with the character flaw, we take that into the workplace as well. So back in 2011, the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis produced a report, and this analyzed the results of multiple studies, and they came to the conclusion that heavier women earn less. And other studies have quantified the connection between weight and pay, saying that an increase of 10% in a woman's body mass decreases her income by about 6%. And more recently, Harvard University analyzed data from over 4 million tests, and what they were testing was attitudes. And this took place between 2007 and 2016. And the analysis of these 4 million tests of attitudes found that biases towards sexual orientation, race, and skin tone decreased over that period. But the bias around body shape increased by 40%. Like, that is such a significant number. And at a time in our culture when I really thought that things were shifting more, when I found that out, I just found it really distressing because it feels like we're moving forward in so many different areas, and yet that isn't happening around our bias about body size. And what these studies capture is the perception that excess weight is a result of a character flaw within the individual, and therefore they are fully responsible for their size. And that's a perception. And I have heard this said before, where someone says, nobody forces you to eat it. If you get up and move, you'd be able to lose the weight. Statements like that don't motivate. They just reinforce the shame. And these are words that can come from family, friends, or even strangers. And oh, especially on the internet. Wow. It feels like people now believe that it's okay to comment or criticize other bodies. Whether it's just a subtle jab disguised as concern or an outright fat-shaming remark, these types of remarks can have a profound impact on an individual's self-esteem and body image. And even within healthcare settings, healthcare providers may use stigmatizing language and attitudes when they are discussing weight with patients. When faced with real-life medical issues, women hear that they should drop a few pounds. This not only negates their experience, but puts the onus of care on them when they have sought medical assistance. So this pervasive use of shame to motivate weight loss in our culture, it reflects a deeply ingrained obsession with thinness and an intolerance of bodies that deviate from the norm. And here's the thing, it doesn't work. And how do we know it doesn't work? Because weight-based shame is so prevalent in our culture that if it did work, we would all be skinny. If shame worked, then when people lost weight, they would keep the weight off instead of having a recidivism rate of over 95%. So why doesn't shame work? And this is where I'm going to call on the work of Brené Brown. Back in episode 14, I talked about Brené Brown's book, Atlas of the Heart. It is a fabulous book. I would strongly recommend, between audio and having the actual physical book, I would go for the physical book. It's beautifully illustrated. The way it's laid out, it's so accessible for anyone. But again, episode 14, if you want to learn more about it, you can go back and listen to that episode after this one and you'll find out some more. In Brené Brown's book, Atlas of the Heart, she clarifies what shame is. And in that definition, I believe that we find what the root of this issue is. And I'm going to quote her here. She says that shame is saying, I'm bad. The focus is on self, not on behavior. The result is feeling flawed and unworthy of love, belonging, and connection. And more than that, this really stuck with me when I read this. Brené says, shame is not a driver of positive change. That's it. That's it right there. You cannot make a positive change. You cannot make lasting health changes that are rooted or being driven by shame. How could it be? How can someone feel that they are unworthy of love, belonging, and connection, but feel that they are worthy of self-care and self-love that comes along with health? So I'm going to let you in on a secret. When you feel like you failed on the latest fad diet, when you strive to eat more nutritious food and find yourself in the drive-thru at the fast food place, shame is not the cure. It is the cause. So what is the cure? In Atlas of the Heart, Brené Brown lays it out for us. She says that empathy and self-compassion together are the antidote for shame. So we know that shame doesn't work. We know that feeling shame for what shape our body is does not make our body look differently. In addition, the mental anguish that we feel impacts our mental health and can result in us feeling very disconnected. So here's what we should try. If shame doesn't work, maybe self-compassion does. Maybe it is possible to love ourselves and accept ourselves into a better quality of life. Maybe we can stress less about the changes that happen over time, and maybe we can achieve a better level of health through care and nourishment of our bodies. And since we know that shame doesn't work, what do we have to lose? So I'm going to go back to Brené's book again. She references Kristen Neff's research on self-compassion and how we can develop and practice self-compassion. According to Kristen Neff, there are three elements of self-compassion, and they are self-kindness, common humanity, and mindfulness. Here is how those three elements are described. So here's how it's described in the book. Self-kindness versus self-judgment. Self-compassion entails being warm and understanding towards ourselves when we suffer, fail, or feel inadequate, rather than ignoring our pain or flagellating ourselves with self-criticism. Self-compassionate people recognize that being imperfect, failing, and experiencing life's difficulties are inevitable, so they tend to be gentle with themselves when confronted with painful experiences, rather than getting angry when life falls short of set ideals. The second element is common humanity. So common humanity versus isolation. Self-compassion involves recognizing that suffering and personal inadequacy is part of the shared human experience, something that we all go through, rather than being something that happens to me alone. And the final element is mindfulness. So mindfulness versus over-identification. Mindfulness is a non-judgmental, receptive mind state in which one observes thoughts and feelings as they are, without trying to suppress them or deny them. We cannot ignore our pain and feel compassion for it at the same time. At the same time, mindfulness requires that we not be over-identified with thoughts and feelings so that we are caught up and swept away by negative reactivity. So for the next week, I want you to be really conscious of these three elements of self-compassion. If you have an experience where you fail or feel inadequate, show yourself kindness and be gentle with yourself. Remember that no one is perfect and painful experiences happen. This is part of our common humanity. You are not alone, and you are still lovable. And finally, be mindful of how you feel. Don't try to suppress or deny your feelings. Allow the feelings to come and sit and observe them, but don't let yourself get swept away by them. I hope you found this helpful. And you can actually save the podcast and replay, or just go to these last little bits or write down the 3 points, so that all week you can try to show yourself self-compassion and see how that works for you. I love hearing from you, so always feel free to pop onto my page, send me a voice memo, send me a message. I'd love to hear if this worked for you, or if you have any suggestions for coming episodes. Take care. Thanks for joining me on another episode of Happy-ish. If you enjoyed this episode, hit the follow button and I can promise you more content like this. But don't keep it to yourself, share it with a friend. So until next time, keep your curiosity alive, spread kindness wherever you go, and never forget that you are the author of your story.
This has been an Awkward Sage production.